everyone. Before we get started, we wanted to let you know about our venue consulting. We have broken up our offerings into four distinct needs: design, sales and client experience, marketing, and those all important SOPs. You can take advantage of one or all of these tricky spots for your venue. If you want to learn more and get a few more details, head on over to hustleandgather.com to see how we can work together and reach your venue goals. All right, let's get to today's show.
When we are in our hardest times of business, this is the time I had the least amount of vision. In fact, I'm half the time I'm like, can we sell this thing?
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't want to do this anymore. I have no vision for it. I have no passion for it, because it just feels like you're constantly on that treadmill of survival.
Welcome to Hustle and Gather, a podcast about inspiring the everyday entrepreneur to take the leap. I am Dana.
I'm Courtney.
And we are two sisters who have started multiple businesses together. And yes, it is as messy as you think, because we know that starting a business isn't easy.
I mean, we've done it four times. And on this show, we talk about the ups and downs of the hustle and the reward at the end of the journey.
And this year, we're talking with our guests about three important topics in our entrepreneurial journey, like team building,
work-life balance,
and how to recover from tragedy, both in business and in life.
We're now in the part of the season where we're talking to some incredible guests on how they recovered after a tragedy. You know, when you simply cannot separate life from business. We'll be talking about how to handle those unexpected moments and how to grow and move forward through those experiences. Last week, we talked with Allie Ingersoll about her life before and after becoming paralyzed.
And so this week, the two of us are talking about the lessons that we took away from Allie.
What a fun person.
I know. Like, so much energy.
I know.
So happy. Like, she was in the hallway. And she had called Cece, and I was like, oh, you're Allie. And she was like, yeah, we were just like chatting, like just so full of life.
Yeah, for
from
sure.
From like the get-go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Seemed just, you know, happy to be doing whatever that day.
Well, I found it super intriguing. Like, she gave you us her life story in like 2.5 seconds. But like all of the things, like when she talks about all of these like experiences, and you have to think about the time frame she's talking about, like all this shit before she was 16 and then before she was like 25. Like, there were so many things. And I was thinking, like, wow, your life moved at such a fast pace.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden it stops.
Yes.
Like, the pace stops.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It had to have been like really, really hard.
It reminded me of one of the things that Jill said in her episode when she was talking about how much TJ did in the like short time of his life.
I was going to mention that, actually, how she said like his universe
was shorter,
was sped up.
Yeah.
Like, and it was like, hey, I have to get all this in because, you know, this is it.
Yeah.
And that's super interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
I had that exact same thought.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Huh. Yeah.
I was thinking it silently over here.
I was going to say it at one point, but then the conversation shifted quickly and I was like, oh, that's not a good time to say it anymore.
Yeah. That's the thing about podcasts, is you never know what direction they're going to go. And you can have like this question queued up that you're going to ask, and you're like, well, that doesn't pertain anymore.
Yes. So true.
Yeah. But no, I loved meeting her.
I really liked how real she was. Like, I feel like, not that I have come across people in general who've had like something overly super tragic happen, but I really loved it how she talked about like the reality of the mental health behind it, even how like some days it's still hard and like even comparing her story to when you were talking about the person who lost her leg. She's like, I'd do it all over again. She's like, I wouldn't do it again.
Yeah.
Like, no, absolutely not. You know, like. And I think that there's something inspiring about the runner who's like, my life started at this. And there's something inspiring about somebody saying, you know what, this isn't my ideal life. I didn't choose this. I don't want this, but I'm still going to live it to the fullest.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think the runner was saying it was her ideal life, but.
No, but I mean, you hear those stories all the time. Like when you hear these inspirational speakers, you go to this place and it's typically an inspirational motivational speaker, someone who had something tragic happen and how they overcame it and how their life has been benefited and better for it. And it was just fine. Like, they're inspirational. It's what they're there for. You're like, oh my gosh, if this person can do this and I can do that. But it's really nice to hear like what I think is real.
For sure. Like, sure. Like, I can, you know, make lemonade out of lemon type situation, but it still sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't choose this for anybody.
Right. But it's said in a way that isn't like, feel bad for me. It's just like, this is reality.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I've mentioned Dawn on here a couple of times, and when they say it doesn't have to be good or bad, it's just neutral.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
It's just neutral.
Yeah.
There isn't positive, there isn't negative, it's just neutral. It's just what it is.
Man, I've learned a lot about in my life. Like, I feel like you grow up and you have to attach a value to something. Oh, that's good. That's bad. That's good.
Oh,
that's
for sure.
Bad. That's good. That's bad. And there's so much of life that is about, it's the only value is how you react to it, right, or the value that you place exactly on it. But there actually isn't any intrinsic value
sure
to it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I thought she had some really great takeaways. What was your favorite, like, overall?
I liked it when she was saying how she was talking about the father of philosophy.
Yeah.
Yeah. He basically said, I have a year. I'm going to kill myself in a year. But in order to do that, I'm going to take 100% responsibility. Like, I'm not going to blame it on anybody or anything mm-hmm. else. And how transformative that was for her. And I can relate to that somewhat. Like, not like, I don't think I've ever taken 100% responsibility for everything that's happened in my life, but there's been moments of really hard times, like going through really hard things. And I feel like you recover and you heal so much faster when you just take 100% of responsibility for it, even though like your best friend or somebody be like, oh, but really it was this or that. And like, you shouldn't blame yourself for this. I'm like, no, at the end of the day, like, I am to blame.
Yeah.
For whatever reason it is.
Yeah.
But there's something really healing about that. And I loved.
Well, because I think when you don't take responsibility, you're taking away your power
yeah.
to change and to do those things. So I think that, I mean, I love that. Because I think, I mean, I can talk about it from multiple angles, like being married to someone who completely gave the responsibility and power for their actions to something that happened to them decades ago, right? It's like, wow, you're like powerless against that, really? But then also, like, from my angle, even like talking with Ally a little bit, like even in the relationship, like, and this is the truth, when I feel the lowest about my relationship, it is the lowest about my lack of action, what I allowed. And I think that that's like where the responsibility starts. Like, how are you allowing people to treat you? Or how are you reacting to people around you? Like, what are you allowing in your life? Because like, ultimately, while you can't necessarily, you know, change everything that happens, like she couldn't change the fact that she became paralyzed or whatnot. What she could change is her thoughts surrounding it, or her yeah. actions surrounding it, or her purpose surrounding it, or whatnot.
Yeah. Well, I find it super interesting because there's like two ways you can go about it. Like, so you're dealing with something and you can say, okay, I take responsibility for it. And it goes down either one path. The first path is shame and
which,
like, oh, I can't believe I let this happen mm-hmm. and I'm such a horrible person or whatnot. And then there's the path that just says, it is, yes, I caused it. This is what it is. It's more like being humble about it
mm-hmm.
and saying, okay, like what can I change? How can this not happen again? Or will this happen again? And if it does, you know, for whatever reason,
yeah.
like, is there a way to minimize the fallout or whatever? Because that to me is where I had to adjust the way I thought about it. Because I don't think I ever really struggled with taking ownership
mm-hmm.
or responsibility, but it was always then put into like this deep, dark place of, oh, well, of course this is your fault because you're not good enough. You know, of course this is your fault because you didn't do this. Of course, you know what I mean? And so I think a lot of people are afraid to take that responsibility because they're afraid to go to that dark place, where I don't think it has to be that. I think it could be, as I said, just very neutral. Like,
mm-hmm.
yeah, this is my fault. I did do this. And I can give you 100 justifications why it shouldn't have been that outcome, but yeah, that's my fault.
Yeah. Yeah.
Moving on. I know that I should have done XYZ, you know?
Yeah.
And that's just like even been like recently, like I feel like we've had many conversations and there's been like this kind of like a standard failure in some ways on how we've been working on event days. And so Amanda, our COO, has been like trying to get to the root of it. And she's like, the root of it is this conversation that you had with them.
Oh, yes.
Lord. And I was like, that really wasn't the conversation I had with them. That was not the intention at yeah. all behind it. But like, and I could have totally sat there and tried to been like, no, that's so wrong. That's not what I meant. But uh-huh. then I was like, oh, that's, yeah, I can take ownership for that.
Yeah.
I did say that on some level, mm-hmm. but like totally like took it to the extreme.
Yeah.
But you know, but yeah, that's my fault.
For sure.
Glad we found the problem.
yeah.
Sorry, I got there.
I know.
You know, but there's a very like prideful part of you that like I had to like fight and say like, because I didn't, not that I didn't want it to be my fault. I just didn't feel like it was my fault.
Yeah.
Because I was like, oh, well they should have, that's like, it was more annoying. Like, that's common sense. Like,
yeah.
Why would they think to take it that mm-hmm. far? You know?
Yeah. Well, there's nothing like managing other people to make things, put a big light on what's your fault.
Right. I'm hearing this conversation in my mind, I'm like, okay, I can like dig my heels in here and say, that's not what it was. This is what it should have been. I could prove my case. I could bring it up. I could say all these things, but does it change what happened? Is it change? Does it change what is happening?
No.
Is it going to change the behavior? No. Mm-hmm. It's none of that. It's going to do literally nothing.
Yeah.
Other than make me feel better.
Yeah.
And does that actually matter? No.
Yeah. Probably not. No.
Right.
Yeah.
So I love that.
No, I think lots of people could benefit just from that. Like if you're like, if you just took 100% of responsibility for what your life is and what's happening to you and how you react to it, like how different would people be?
Yeah. And I think that's like step one. And
yeah.
We've been around people who are like, yeah, that's my fault. And then they just never ever change. And they're not afraid to admit that it's their fault, but they're also like perfectly fine creating chaos.
It makes me just think through, and not to like harp on the point, like I think through like multiple like family members and like people you've interacted with. You ever like been in or interact with somebody that has a total victim mentality? Like how annoying it is.
So annoying.
It's like everything is someone else's fault and they are powerless as to what happens to them on every level. Like it doesn't matter. Like it could be like what they ate that day or like how someone drove beside them or how someone spoke to them or like, you know, everything. It's annoying to be around.
It is.
Like if you think about the opposite of like, you don't want to be that person that takes no responsibility for their life at all. Right. My overall favorite kind of takeaway was that she at the beginning was more mentally paralyzed than physical, which I think is super powerful when it comes from someone who's so physically paralyzed.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, wow, you wouldn't think that that was the biggest hurdle. But I think that that's what makes her message so universal. Do you know what I mean? Is that we've all been there. Like we've all been to that spot where it's literally what's holding us back isn't our ability to like, you know, take the steps or do the thing. Because I think we're talking probably mostly to able-bodied people, but it literally like how powerful our mind is in preventing on what's best for our person and our body and who we are and our life. And I think I've definitely been there before. It was like, you know, I'm just trapped in the prison that is my mind, yet I have all the ability, you know? And I think it can go in so many, like I said, dark ways, like where I said, for me, the self-loathing kind of spot is me getting trapped in my own mind, you know, not necessarily my physical spot. And I think even like going to a divorce and kind of equating it to that, there's a big mental hurdles you have to get over more so than just being physically in the same space as somebody.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
like that was a lot easier for me.
I don't know if I've had like a genuine like mental, like felt mentally paralyzed.
Uh-huh.
Like I haven't. And I think that there's definitely been like moments where I have felt like, okay, like I feel stuck, like I don't know what to do or I don't know how to like grow beyond this or go beyond this. But I've just like, I don't know. Like, I don't know if it's just I haven't experienced something large enough for mm-hmm. that, you know, which is probably completely valid. Or if it's just more, I don't know. I just never really approached life any other way. Like I had this whole conversation with Henry about it. Actually, he was trying to do something and he did one thing and then he couldn't do it. And he was like, well, that's it. And I was like, no, there's like 10 other ways to solve this problem.
Yeah.
Like try this. And he's just like getting so annoyed. And I was like, you can't like just stop trying.
Yeah.
Like, there will be a point at some point like where you've exhausted all your resources, you tried all the things and it doesn't work, right? And it's why I think you totally call me like the bulldog or whatever. And it's why Sam's like, when you want something done, he's like, you're just going to call this person because you're going to figure out how to fix it. Like, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
So I've never really experienced like a genuine, true like, oh my gosh, like I don't see a way out of this or I can't think my way through this problem.
Yeah. No, I've definitely been to the spot of just like giving up, like you're just surviving and you're not necessarily putting any thought to what you're doing and your actions. Like I've been at that juncture in my life where it's like, I'm just wherever the wave is taking me now. Like I've mentally given up.
Yeah, no, I mean, I when I think about it, because I feel like she's was probably a very similar person in a lot of ways, the way that she just had all the adventures mm-hmm. and did all the things. So she probably very much had a similar life philosophy. Like, oh, yeah. Well, like, I can fix this. I don't want to do this. Okay, I'm going to go here. I'm not going to wallow in this. I'm just going to keep going. And mm-hmm. then to hear that, like, I mean, it's just like,
yeah,
it takes such a huge thing to get to that point.
Yeah, for sure. You know? I think that makes her story just relatable.
Yeah.
What was your favorite business takeaway?
Okay. So when she was talking about like kind of getting past that mental hurdle, that kind of mental paralyzation, that she had to redirect her mind for survival and then reimagined what's possible.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like there is a lot of times in business where you are triaging. Things are just kind of falling apart. Things aren't happening. And I think it's cyclical. I think that any business that says they're on a plateau and stays on the plateau longer than 2 years is lying. Like, it's just not. Like, it goes into these ebbs and these flows, right? Like, things are really good and then it's really hard and then it's really good. And it's because especially if you deal with people, like on both sides, if you're dealing with clients or you're dealing with employees, because people don't plateau, right? And so kind of like, and I feel like it's a philosophy that I've never put into words, that we've kind of embodied, like redirecting, like, hey, we're going to redirect our resources, our time and our energy for survival. Like, how can we get past the thing that is the imminent danger, right, of the business? And then once we get past that point and we kind of get everything settled, it's always this period of complete reimagining of like, oh my gosh, okay. Because before, when you're in the middle of it, you can't think of anything else other than like that moment.
Yeah.
And you can't vision like cast, you can't dream, you can't be creative. And then once you get past that survival mode, you're able to really, truly reimagine what's possible. And I think those are the most fun times of our business, when it's always when we've had the craziest ideas and the coolest ideas and best growth, because you almost are like, well, do you have to go through the bad to get to that reimagining? And I don't really know, because I know any other way, but like,
yeah, it's so interesting. I like literally just had this conversation with Taylor recently, because I was talking about when she was saying this, it reminded me of like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, like how when like that kind of triangle and like all of your mental energy goes to that survival part. Like if you don't know where your food's coming from and you don't know where you're going to stay, you like feel like you're constantly in like a survival mode, either emotionally or resource wise or whatever. And it's not really until you start getting up the triangle that you start going into these higher levels of thinking, and you start thinking about like purpose, and you start thinking about giving back, and you start thinking about how you can help humanity. Because it's hard when you can't necessarily 100% like help yourself, and you can put this in business, when you can't meet all your business needs, like your basic business needs, how much of your mental energy goes to that and everything else just kind of shuts off, right, to get through that spot. And it's not until like you get to that, and I think he called it like, is it actualization or something like that? I don't really know what the term was, but it's so true. Like when we are in our hardest times of business, this is the time I had the least amount of vision. In fact, I'm half the time I'm like, can we sell this thing?
Yeah.
You know, like I don't want to do this anymore. I have no vision for it. I have no passion for it, because it just feels like you're constantly on that treadmill of survival. And I don't like operating like in that state. And I can also bring this back to personal. Like, I mean, there was so much of my adult life, and especially my 30s, like just felt like I was on the treadmill of survival, like trying to figure it out. And I think for me personally, why it's felt so good being on my own is to be able to like get out of that constant like reactionary triage state, but to actually like move through some of the more higher planes of thinking that are in my brain. But I think that's so true. Like I think you in triaging and getting it to the point where your brain can function into reimagining like where it needs to go.
And I think that like when I think back to moments of our business, and to be truthful, we're kind of like in the middle of like a very much redirecting for survival phase right now. And the difference is that probably 4 years ago, it would have gotten so far beyond what we didn't see the red flags. Like when you know, it all kind of blew up 4 years ago at 1.2 or 2018, 2019. And we didn't see any of the red flags. And so we didn't really know it until it was very much broken. And then it was like intense redirecting for survival. And like, and then it was became one of our biggest growth periods for the business after that. And right now, what I like am grateful for is we started seeing some signs of like, okay, this is going down to a breakdown mode. Like this is you can see it in our client experience. You can see it in our company culture. Like there is just a broken piece. And what's been hard is us trying to figure out what it is. So we've been like redirecting all of our resources to like, you know, suss out this cancer of sorts, right?
Yeah.
To figure out where is it? What is the cause? Where is it coming from? So we can get back to a place, and which is how we hired Amanda. Cause we're like, okay, this is obviously like this is something that we can't not that we can't figure out, but that we're just not succeeding at in general. But even bringing her on and having another person, there has been a lot of conversations about, okay, like we're just going to get through this year. We're going to get through this 6 months. And then the amount of ideas that like flow between the three of us has been really neat and like really fun to see like, okay, there's this reimagining period coming. But it's been very much like in that redirecting for survival. And it's not even for business survival. Like the business is fine. It's more of trying to figure out how to evolve with the times, because that's the other thing is you have businesses who they're like, okay, this is how we do things. And we've done this for 10 years and it's worked. It worked 10 years ago, it worked 5 years ago. And I think we've never been afraid to say, you know what, this did work for 5 years, but
you know, it doesn't.
This isn't working right now.
Yeah.
You know, because the generation of employees have changed. Like their needs have changed. Their wants have changed. Our clients have changed. Like the expectations have changed.
Yeah.
The like what people are paying has changed. Like all of these things have changed and we have to be able to adjust with it. And I feel like every time when you have to make that adjustment, it's always a very messy period.
I think so too. And I think too, like it feels a lot less personal. I mean, I definitely take some failure in it, but I feel like probably inevitable. You know what I'm saying? Like those things are going to happen. So instead of it being like, oh fuck, here we are again. It's like, okay, here we are again. Like, let's like, what did I learn? What can I take away? And fixing it sooner and you know, those kind of things. But just like expecting that things are going to change and evolve. And I think back about that. Like we've been in business almost like, honestly, like almost 20 years. Like things are going to change.
Right.
Right. We're going to make mistakes and we're going to do those things. But I think that, I think I was talking to Taylor about kind of like my thoughts on like Maslow's hierarchy of needs. I said, my life did not go like this up the triangle. It was kind of like this and then straight back down and then bounce, 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 bounce. And then maybe up a little bit and then back down here and then bounce, 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 bounce. You know, like that's kind of how life goes, you know? But I think just kind of accepting that I think is important. Yeah. For business, my takeaway was kind of defining what success looks like, how she had to give up
that
idea of like what conventional American white picket fence, et cetera, success was, even before her accident, that, hey, I don't fit into that category and success looks different to me, I think is important, like from a business perspective. Like it may not be that, you know, like you're the most profitable business. It may be, you know, that you're overemployed because you want the freest of life, or that giving back means something to you, or your employee satisfaction means something to you, or you overspend on client experience because you want to be known for that. Like everyone has their thing like that they deem as successful. And I think kind of defining that for you and not picking up on someone else's pattern.
Yeah.
I think is important.
For sure. And I think it's also important to be not to be afraid that that's going to change too.
Yeah.
Like that definition of success is going to change with each phase of life that you're in, with each season of business you're in. And that's why I think it's really important to kind of look at whatever you do your planning year, 2 years, like what would make this year a success for me?
Yeah.
And, you know, anytime I've kind of had, me and Sam had those conversations in general, like for our family, like what would be a successful year for us, like as a family? And it's changed every year. Mm-hmm. Like every year it's changed because we've all changed and the circumstances, you know, about the kids are doing and all that stuff has changed. And I think it's such an important conversation. It's one of the things that like I said, I've really kind of like leaned into this year because I have felt very like in our journey in the industry and in our community I've always felt that pressure of keeping up with the Joneses.
Yeah.
I've always felt this feeling of like, oh, well, this person's doing this. So, and they're super successful, which means that like, you know, we're not successful because we don't do this, or we don't have this type of client, or we don't have this amount of weddings or whatever. And it's such a toxic way to think.
Yeah.
And it leads to a place where you're never content because you're always chasing something that you're never going to get because you're chasing something that isn't yours at all. Like it's not your path. It's not your journey. It's not your success. Because once you get there, because we've gotten there like, okay, well, we have the same amount of weddings. We have the same kind of clients. We charge the same amount of money. And the amount of like discontentment that follows along.
Yeah.
Is just so frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And that was the thing that like for this year, I was talking to Sam. I was like, I think ultimately, and I think I'm getting there really, really closely there, is what I'm searching this year and what I want and what would be successful for me personally is like, it's just peace.
Mm-hmm.
It's just peace and contentment.
Yeah.
It's not feeling like I have to constantly be doing something to prove anything.
Yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
And I think it's such a hard, it is so hard if you are kind of like, I don't want to say brought up in this world, but like so hard in the business world, so hard in, I mean, I can only speak to this industry because it is so comparative.
And constantly like striving for that next thing, best yeah. thing, the new thing, the different things. It's constantly changing.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that is hard.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree with the piece. For me, I feel like I want to get back into my like more creative self. Like I'm kind of seeking that, like some fun and creativity to like see where the next thing goes, yeah. you know? Yeah. Like I feel like I'm ready for that kind of, not finalizing that, but just getting fueled towards that, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The fuck up, like where have you like, out of all this advice, inspirational things or things that we talked about, like where have you like, and we've kind of talked about a little bit, like fucked it up royally.
I don't know. Like, I mean, I fucked up lots of stuff royally, but I feel like definitely giving somebody else responsibility for my actions was one of the things. I liked how she talked about the voluntary emotional hostage. Yeah. There was a really, really long time in my life where I was like, I cannot be upset about my life because so many people have it so much worse. And like it paralyzed me to make changes in my life or to talk about what was going on or to bring other perspectives in, because it was like, I should be happy. Like, why am I not? Like, why would this not be good enough? You know? And it kept me in a relationship for way too long. I'm like literally, I remember telling somebody, my therapist, I'm like, well, I don't feel like my physical person's affected. Like, he hasn't hit the kids. I'm like, that was the marker of success for a relationship. Like, oh, I can pursue my business and I'm not being hit. Like, what in the actual, like when I think back on that, but it's like, oh, but I could never say this to somebody because that looks so much worse. This is so much worse. This is so much worse. And people you talk to confirm that. Oh, but have you heard so-and-so's story? Or it's not as bad as this. Or like, even like when I talk to my mother all the time, it's very much like that. She was talking about this trip she went on this past weekend. And she was like, it just makes me feel so much better about her family. Like that's so much worse and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, comparison is a thief of joy. And I feel like, honestly, comparison is the thief of growing, is really what it is. Like, when we're comparing ourselves to others, makes us powerless to grow ourselves. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's probably where I, like, fucked up the most, I feel like, is when I'm like, well, it's not that bad, or, like, that kind of holding that emotional hostage. I love that yeah. term, the thought about that, because that's what we
yeah,
do.
Yeah, there's a phrase for it. Like, it's all, you always imagine it's worse, so you can't, like, ever mm-hmm. say that what you're going through is hard or whatever. I don't know. Like, I thought there was a lot for sure that I felt like, you know, that she talked about that was tough. I think, you know, having a hard time not falling into the trap of like what success is to the rest of the world is hard. And I think that comes from a lot of things. I think I always wanted to be included. I think I always wanted to have nice things. And so that obviously is a marker of success in our society or whatever. But yeah, I think that what was super interesting to me when I was listening to her story was how very much independent she was. Mm-hmm. Like, and her parents like, just call us once a month, let us know you're alive. And then how much she had to lean into other people. And I think that the story could have gone a very different way. Like, if she was just like, kind of resisting that.
Yeah.
And even when she talks about her year of where she was like, hey, I just want to live a year. Like, if she had resisted anyone helping her, like, I would assume that she would have just fallen through with it because there would be nobody, it would seem impossible, like an yeah. impossible feat to get through, like, life in general.
Do you ever see the movie You Before Me, Me Before yes. You? So it reminded me of that scenario, which always, the movie always made me, like, I love the movie.
One. I did not love the movie.
I do love the movie, but I also don't agree with it. You know what I'm saying?
I don't
agree or disagree. Like, I could see it from both sides, but it felt very much like that.
It's not your decision at the end of the day.
It was his decision, and I do agree with, like, the, like, body autonomy and, like, his decision and all that. But then I just think about, like, all the missed opportunities.
But, I mean, that's your own experience.
It's my own experience. I know, but it just reminded me of that, like, when she was talking about that.
Yeah. But I thought it was, I think it's super interesting, like, and everyone has, you know, obviously not, like, the same medical thing, but there's always, I feel like everyone has something in their life that they have to release control of and they have to have someone else help them. And whether that's like as simple as raising kids or as simple as running a business or whatever the case may be, like, or even just dealing with mental health things, like kind of relying on someone else to help you get through that, like needing a therapist or whatever. There was such a long part of my life where that was just not possible.
Because of you.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah. And there is definitely this very tightly held belief that, or I guess you could say pride or whatever, where you were praised for how functional you are. Like that is the biggest thing people tell me. The biggest praise anyone ever tells me is how like efficient I am, how productive I am, how do you do it all? Like, it's nothing else. There's nothing else in my business. It's not like, oh my God, you built this amazing business. Like, oh my God, you built this great client experience. Like, oh my God, you have an amazing team. It's literally what it is. And so when you internalize it, then you feel like a total imposter when you're like, well, I can't do it all. Like, I have all these people helping me. And I always joke, oh, my husband does laundry. Like, that's what I joke all the time. Like, I haven't done laundry in 2 years.
Yeah. Like, I really like doing laundry, actually.
Yeah. But I'm saying, like, it obviously does so much more than that. And obviously I'm not doing it by myself, you know, but it's just this very hard place to be to say, like, you cannot do life alone.
No, I think it's impossible. I do think you thought you could, but that is impossible. I've determined that too. I got back from the hospital yesterday and Nora's teacher had called. I didn't know when I was going
to
get home.
To be fair, you weren't in the hospital.
I wasn't in the hospital. I wasn't. No, but I was overnight in the hospital with somebody and I was tired. And because we were in the emergency room all night. And the teacher texted me and said, hey, I really want Nora to be able to go to the performance tonight. Do you mind if I pick her up? Can you find a ride home? And I was like, sure. Because I really didn't know like when I was going to fall out to the house. And then I called Dana to pick up my son. And then I called Amelia's, another one of my daughter's friend's parents and said, can you take her home from the thing? I had everything lined up. Well, I ended up, the person didn't get discharged from the hospital, so I'm getting there early. And I'm like, well, I'm not going to put these people out. Like, I called Dana, like, I'm going to be able to pick up Mason. Like, don't worry about it or whatnot. And then the teacher calls and it's like, hey, I'm on the way. And I'm like, actually, I was on the way home. Like, I'm on the way home to get Nora. I haven't seen her. And she's like, well, I've rearranged. She's like, I've made my schedule around it. I don't mind picking her up. And I was like, I haven't seen Nora. But like, and there was everything in me that was like, oh, I could just power through this and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, you know what? No. It's fine. Like, she's here. She's on the way. She picked her up. The other friend dropped her off. I was asleep before she even got home. Like, I went to bed at 7 o'clock last night. I was so tired. But I was like, you know, she wasn't unhappy to do it. She didn't say it out of obligation. And it's like just taking that out of your mindset. Like, we're people. We're all connected. And it feels good to help somebody else. Yeah. I mean, even like Dana calling me the other week about like watching the dog, which that's a whole nother thing. I would watch a Henry, an Ada or whatever. It's the fur that drives me crazy. But I was like, I felt bad. Like, I was kind of like hemming and hawing. So, an apology, like, for the moment. I was like, no. I know she knows how I feel about the dog. I know she knows how I feel about the fur. So, like, if she's in a bind, like, no, that's why she's calling me. Like, it's the only reason. So, of course I'm going to do it, right? Like, of course I'm going to do that. Like, I want to be helpful. I care about their success of their weekend or whatnot. So, yes. But, like, I love to be able to do that, even though, like, I don't necessarily like having an extra dog. I hardly even like my dog half the time, you know? But it's like, you're taking away from somebody else when you don't give them the opportunity to step in and help and be useful and connect with you in that way. Because I feel like everybody really wants that. And even being a single parent, it's unavoidable half the time for me now. Like, it's not an option. I can't manage four people's lives at the same time, especially when their lives happen at the same time. You know, so I just think kind of coming to that acceptance and not really glorifying independence as the marker for success.
Yeah. And I think for me, a lot of it wasn't really glorifying it. It wasn't. And I think if you would have asked me probably 10 years ago and people would say those comments to me, it would make me feel good about myself. And now I have no emotions about it. Mm-hmm. I really don't. But for me, what was hard and where I kind of created this world for myself was it was out of self-preservation in a lot of ways. Like, even early on, like when we were married, we asked for a lot of help because we needed it. We genuinely needed it. And it was a constant, like, no. Like, it just was a no, like, from people that we trusted and whatnot. And so then we just stopped asking, right? And even now, like, with the kids, like, I'm not afraid to ask you for help, obviously. But if I know, like, okay, I'm going to be out of town for, like, I was out of town for a couple days or, like, a long time because I went to Florida before I went to Austin. And I told him, I was like, can you just ask your parents just to pick up the kids one day? It'll be really helpful. And he was like, I'm not going to ask them.
Yeah.
And I was like, why? He's like, they'll probably say yes. And then they'll cancel the day before. And he's like, I'd rather just know what I'm getting myself into.
I feel that.
I would rather just have the schedule. And I was like, this is exactly how we have lived our life. Like very much like, because there's been so much disappointment.
Mm-hmm. It's about like unmet expectations.
It is. But, yeah. But I was talking to my therapist about this and she was like, she's like, you know, those are valid feelings for sure. She's like, but you have the wrong community. If your community is consistently doing that, it's the wrong community. And you have to create the community that is going to be there and that is going to show up. Which sounds exhausting, number one.
I know.
I don't know how to find those people.
Yeah.
And I feel like it requires a lot of work.
It does.
It was a very valid point. And it was very much like your community, your people, the people that love you and care about you, they're going to show up. They're going to want to help. They're going to be the ones that find joy in that. And it doesn't have to be necessarily this person you're super close with. But like, I know at any given time there is a parent on Ada's school basketball team that would take Ada home. Like, no question.
Yeah.
Like, without cause, without any, just like, oh, you need help? Perfect. I'll do it for you. Mm-hmm. Right. And so it doesn't have to be these like lifelong best friends and these people in your life forever. But the people that are, you know, that you've created relationships with and in your community now are, you know, worth reaching out to.
Yeah.
For sure.
I know. It's definitely like a life lesson.
Yeah.
Because it's like autonomy is not possible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sam was supposed to chaperone a field trip, an overnight field trip for Henry, and he ended up having to back out because of work. And Ada was at dinner last night. She's like, where was I going to go? Because I was out of town. Because I would have done it. And I was like, I'm out of town. She's like, where was I supposed to be? I was like, oh, we are just going to have you stay over at your friend's house. She's like, have you asked? I was like, no, but they don't. They would do it. It's fine.
Where was I going to go?
She's like, you have another kid.
Yeah.
She's like, I can stay home by myself. I'm like, how are you going to get to school?
She's like, that is neither here nor there.
Right.
I will be fine. All right. Well, so good.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah.
I really want to see her speak. I would love, like maybe in the show notes, we'll put when her next engagement is and see if we can, because I think that I would love to see like kind of what she talks about. And
yeah,
I feel we can always learn about inclusivity better.
For sure.
In general.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
To learn more about our hustles, visit us on the gram at C&D Events, at the Bradford NC, at anthem.house, and at Hustle and Gather. And if you're interested in learning more about our speaking, training, or venue consulting, head to our website at hustleandgather.com.
And if you love us and you love this show, we'd be more than honored if you left a rating and a review.
This podcast is a production of Earfluence. I'm Courtney.
And I'm Dana.
And we'll talk with you next time on Hustle and Gather.